My grandmother, during a period of her life, did not have the right to vote. The law in Texas was that idiots, imbeciles, the insane, and women could not vote. And less than one generation later, I was the governor of Texas. Now that will tell you that we have progressed.
Turning outrage into outcomes. This is the Texas Blue Action Podcast.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. We have taken a brief break over the holidays and gearing up for the primaries, but we are back with our special segment that is called Zero Fucks Friday because everybody here is just over it. And today we are going to be discussing school boards, which were not just school boards, but schools, what's happening in Texas schools, what's actually happening nationwide. And we are here as parents and educators and public school advocates to talk about our frustrations and not only that, but what we can do about it. And so the first thing I want to do is introduce myself. I'm Lana Hansen, the executive director of Texas Blue Action Democrats. We have Carrie Collier Brown here with us, who is the president of Texas Blue Action Democrats, an attorney and a parent of three children that are in elementary and one in middle school. Also moved to a new district this year. So that's an interesting perspective we'll be able to discuss. We have Laura Yeager, who has been a public school advocate for decades fighting to help fund schools and so many other important things to keep the train on the tracks for our public schools. And Courtney Perry, who is with us, who also a mother. All of us, like I mentioned on this call, are mothers, but she was a 20-year PE and educator. And she left teaching last year due to so many things that, were pushing her out of the public school sector. And we look forward to talking to her about that. And so actually, Courtney, why don't we start there? I mean, I think that one of the topics that isn't being covered enough is how our teachers feel. I was just saying to y'all before we hopped on this call that myself and my children have had one of the best years with some phenomenal educators, and it is just breaking my heart to see what's happening in the public school sector in regards to funding and other things that are making teachers want to leave. So talk to me about your past. Maybe you can share a little bit about your bio and then tell us about that decision to leave.
Okay, thank you for having me. So yeah, like you said, I was a 20-year veteran teacher, award-winning at one point in 2017. I was named as Texas Elementary Physical Education Teacher of the Year. So I was, one would say, at the top of my game. And I actually left in September of 2020, pretty near when I attended a City of Austin meeting that was from their diversity office. And it was talking about how the pandemic was disproportionately affecting people of color. And I thought of a lot of, my students at the time and then students I'd had in the past. And I just felt really compelled to do something. I've always had a gut feeling that the powers that be are not fans of public education. It frankly costs too much. And so to me, I could see the writing on the wall that they were going to use this experience to this pandemic to really crumble public schools. So I ended up leaving. And in September of 2020, like I said, and then very quickly got involved. Actually, one of my first phone calls was to Laura Yeager, who someone had recommended that I talk to. And weirdly enough, I actually taught Laura's kids at one point in my career. So, I got in touch with some people that had a lot of knowledge around public education and decided what I could do was just to get involved in my community more closely. So I've become a community organizer and am a big advocate for my local school district.
Well, and I just want to interject real quick. One of the things I forgot to mention about Courtney is that now she works with us at Texas Blue Action as our Travis County regional organizer. And we're so happy to have you. And, it's really both heartbreaking and exciting, heartbreaking to lose you in the public school sector, but really exciting to have you out here advocating, for public schools in a different arena.
Yeah, I think what I'll finish with is just to say that I actually saw some of my teacher friends because, they when you teach at the same school for year after year, you become, it's like family. So I saw a few of them last night. And what you said about that your kids are having a great year, This is a really, really tough year. I think it's shockingly tougher than last year, which felt like, you know, nothing could be harder than that. But I think in some ways teachers are feeling that they can also just like let go of all the nitty gritty and just be with the kids, because that's what the teachers, that's why we are teachers, because we love the kids. Unfortunately, again, the powers that be are going to make it hard. And my campus alone, I believe, lost 9 people, and we'll lose a 10th one this year. And then, you know, the other thing is what I love that's come out of this is that because I taught physical education, I taught all the kids in the school, and I had for 12 years at that same school. It was a big deal when I left, and a lot of community members sat up and paid attention that we're losing one of our best teachers at our beloved school and what's going on. So I think, you know, if I were going to say some positives that have come out of this, it's that the community is paying attention.
Well, and I think that hasn't AISD or Austin Independent School District lost 500?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Which is a large number. I mean, we are a huge district with 85,000 students. I don't know how many staff members there are, but that is a significant number. And so, you know, Laura, let's pivot to you for a second. And, you know, of all the years that you've been advocating for public schools, public school policy, and, you know, almost more importantly, or at the top of the list, funding for public schools, you know, how does the last couple of years compare to that? And then also, I think to Courtney's point about teachers feeling really undervalued right now, is a lot of that is lack of funding, right? They don't have the resources to be successful. So Laura, tell me a little bit about what you've seen in the space, what it looks like now compared to what it's looked like in the past, and where you think we're headed.
All right. Well, that's a big charge, but I'll do my best. So just quick background. I mean, I moved to Texas in 1997 when my oldest was 1, and I had 3 kids go all the way through Texas public schools. The youngest is now 20 and a sophomore in college. So I have been doing this for a while. And I got engaged originally over standardized testing issues, seeing what it was doing to our schools. So I was part of a parents group that started a grassroots organization fighting back against high-stakes standardized testing. Just to sort of explain the different angles I've looked at. I then worked for an association that represented the small school districts and was there on their legislative team, where I reported and saw how testing and accountability and funding and all these issues fit together. Then got pulled further into funding when AISD had a million dollar budget deficit. And we started a group to help people advocate at the Capitol about funding our schools, which was a cohesive argument rather than what we love to do. And the legislature loves to pit us against one another, rich against poor, large against small, urban against rural. We're like, nope, no one's getting enough. So we did our research, and I can get some more details into that. And then I also along the way started a group that helps educators engage and model civic engagement for students, because all of this would be a lot easier if actually people voted in the state of Texas and did their research, thought about public schools when they voted. So when we started, public education has been one of the only bipartisan issues. Rural Republicans, urban Democrats alike have supported their public schools. They've worked together to fight vouchers for the entire period of time I've been doing this, because public schools are at the center of our communities. They're the number one employer in a lot of communities. It's where Friday Night Lights happens. It's really, it's what brings people together. And it's the center of our democracy, right? And so it has been cohesive. What I have seen over the last few years is as more people voted, as educators voted in 2018, the 2019 session was the public education session. In 2019, it was also less lopsided in terms of political parties at the Capitol, and they moved more to the middle and said, you know, we're going to support our public schools. This last session was extremely red meat. We're going to do what we want and not really think about the electorate. And a lot of legislators have been thinking about the primaries. They redistricted, right? So they know they're safe. And what's happened, and I can talk a little more specifically, is what had been a core value and one of the I think it's first, it may be second. Healthcare is giving us a run for our money for expenditures at the state level. Public ed is a huge expenditure, and Courtney hit on it a little bit. Not everybody wants to spend that much money. Texas loves to be first, right? We want to be the leader in everything. We, going into the 2019 session, were 43rd, according to Education Week, in per student spending. Now, actually, if you looked at how much money we spend per student, we would have been 49th, but that gave us an F. But because we are equitable, and I know people complain about recapture, and that is a big deal, but because we have this Robin Hood recapture program, it is more equitable. That got us a B. So an F and a B got us a D minus and moved us from 49th to 43rd. So really, if you look at how much each kid's getting, it's not enough. It's $4,000 less than the national average. And even after House Bill 3, which we got in 2019, which did put some money in, but if they had put in enough for us to be average, instead of $6 billion, it would have been $44 billion for the biennium. So we have a long way to go. It's a lot of money. But what's happened is our kids and the schools have been the sort of the locus because they saw how valuable the schools were during the pandemic, I think, and where all the social programs meet, where we attend to all the needs that our economy and system don't really attend to, but we do in the schools. I think that brought the culture wars there. And people who don't really agree with equity, with a range of different things, it brought it there, and it started being our kids are, they're playing politics with our children. So I don't know if that's too much or too little, but maybe start there.
Well, I want to circle back for a second to recapture and then move on to the culture wars conversation. You know, so the numbers came out, right? And so Austin AISD paid, what was it, $6 million more in recapture fees than other large ISDs around the state. And so talk to me about that. What does that look like for, you know, local folks? And is there room for reform on recapture?
So the deal is, the way we figure out recapture, it is number of kids divided by the property value of your taxable area. It doesn't have anything to do with how rich or poor your kids are, if they are emerging bilinguals, if they have special ed needs, none of it. Right. So whenever there's one less kid in the denominator, in the numerator, right, the smaller the top is and the bigger the bottom is, the larger your number is. That looks like that's your wealth per kid. Austin has extremely valuable property, even though we're taxing at the one of the certainly not the highest rate. We're not at the highest rate. So the value of our property is going up. Gentrification, a whole set of reasons. That's a whole different discussion. Right. So property value is going up. Every kid who either gets gentrified out and moves to Pflugerville, every kid who goes to a charter, our numerator goes down. So as that equation changes, we look richer and richer, and we look like the richest district in the state. So we pay the most in. I think it's $800 million one recent year. So we do. The problem is we pay money in, and more districts are paying in. They may have extremely, they have kids who are expensive to educate. What happens is the state takes that money. Often as property taxes rise, the state was paying less as the localities were paying more. So they weren't adding on. It just was the sum was the same. Localities were paying more and the state was paying less. In House Bill 11, it switched up. So the state's paying a little bit more, but it didn't grow the pie all that much. And what one of the groups just funded that I'm part of said is, look, we don't really want to fight over it. Austin is paying a lot. But what I saw when I worked with the small school districts, urban poor fighting rural poor, they're all poor. We all need more money. And we believe that every single kid in the state of Texas deserves more than 43rd or 49th or 41st.
What is the state doing with that money?
So that's the other thing. So money that goes
in. Are recapture fees funding charter schools?
Well, I saw a recent statistic that almost the exact amount of money going into recapture equals the amount that we're paying for charters. But the other point is everyone's paying all these property taxes. They are high. We don't have an income tax. You're going to have to tax somewhere. Sorry. If you want lower property taxes, we might talk about some other ways. They didn't talk at all about other ways of gaining income. They don't want to talk about, you know, legalizing marijuana. I mean, there are all sorts of things, getting rid of the loopholes for businesses. But what happens is money that goes in for education It doesn't have to go to education, and it's not. Before the 2019 session, almost $4 billion that went in for education got sucked off. I think the last biennium, it was even more. And so money going in for education is not necessarily going there. They're preying on people's anger about the fact that they're paying all of this. And I'll add one thing. I mean, last session, we just were trying to protect House Bill 3. And then there was COVID, right? We wanted to go further. We knew that that wasn't going to work that well. They swapped out the first set of federal COVID dollars instead of passing it along as extra money to our districts. The state paid $1.3 billion less, right? The second round of $5.5 billion, I recently remembered or found out again, it's been a few months, they took our hold harmless out of that. They took the hold harmless that the state was going to pay out of federal dollars that were supposed to be in addition to. And the only way we knew what was going on in the state was working with our democratically elected Congress people. And I'm going to call out Lloyd Doggett, because if we were not working with Lloyd Doggett's office, we would not know what was happening at our state level. And they put some language in the American Rescue Plan to make sure that the dollars intended for schools had to go to schools, because people at the legislature don't trust our schools anymore. That's what was happening. They were saying, well, we don't trust the administrators, or they don't need all that money. We gave them all this money. We had to fight. I don't think a penny would have gone. And billions of dollars are going to our schools because we worked with every level of government to find out what our state was doing. So, sorry, I get a little agitated about that one.
No, as you should. And, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking to myself and wondering, Courtney, as an educator, and knowing that so many of the teachers in our district have to move out for affordability issues. So many people, you know, all of the schools need more funding. And essentially, our state government that has been in control, Republicans, the GOP have been in control for 26 years, y'all. The failures that are happening have been in place by the same people for 26 years, right? And so, you know, Courtney, how does that make you feel? I mean, as an educator, as somebody who left a profession that you love, to know that all of this money is there, there's money, and they're not putting it back into education where it should go.
Yeah, that was a key part of my leaving. One of the things that I looked into when I first started being angry and deciding I was going to get out was I looked into the Permanent School Fund, which is run by TEA. And I've been told that it would take they would have to change the Texas Constitution to get some money out of that. But that's just one example that there's this fund that is millions or billions. It's a lot of money. And there are two men that are running the fund, and they themselves make lots of money on how much the fund makes. But during this major pandemic that was going on, when, you know, students couldn't access the virtual learning because they didn't have internet, you know, that money alone from the Texas Permanent School Fund could have gone to help those communities, those rural communities. So, you know, that was one of my first feelings of, what are we doing? You know, and where is the focus on the kids, which is what everybody likes to say, but that's not really the truth. You know, and then you go down to this more local level that I have many of my friends have to have a second job. Teacher friends have to have a second job because they can't afford to, they're not paid enough to live in Austin, because it's so expensive to live here. So they have to have a second job. And teachers, I mean, you know, maybe it's been said maybe it's been said a lot, but teachers don't make enough money. So that, coupled with knowing that the money is there in different fashions, but it's not being given to the kids. It's infuriating. And again, I really hope the community is starting to pay attention to the issues. And I recently made a post because there's another issue going on in my school district. And I recently made a post that just said, I really think that voting is our only way out of this.
100%. And voting, you know, doing the research about who the pro public education candidates are. And to Laura's point earlier, those candidates can be on both sides of the aisle. You know, we're not necessarily, but currently, we know that the GOP and the Republicans, you know, this has been a part of dismantling public education, has been a part of their playbook for a really long time. And the gift that has been given to them in the last couple of years are now the culture wars, right? Are now these issues that are fear-based and you know, based in racism and a lot of other terrible isms that are coming to the front. And it all started, it seems, or maybe didn't start, but was really amplified by the masking issue. And so Carrie, let's talk for a moment, you and I, as parents that live in side-by-side districts, but you know, are different. And, you know, we were able in our district to lobby our school board and our trustees to implement a mask mandate when our kids were getting ready to go back to school in September and Travis County was in stage 5 and, you know, our hospitals were full and things were looking bad. And our trustees responded and they implemented that and it's been successful, you know, and I, as a parent, have been incredibly grateful to the handling of that. And so, but your experience wasn't the same in your district. So can you talk to me about that as a parent, how you felt and what that means for you, and you know, how you're looking at voting and what candidates that you're looking for?
Sure. Yeah. My family moved to a small school district that's in the Austin area, Eanes School District. There's, I think fewer than 8,000 students, all feed into one high school. And in my view, Eanes did a terrific job last year. They kept the schools open. They had universal masking. Like they seemed really on top of it. It was one of the reasons why that sort of solidified our decision to move over here. And then the school year started probably about 6 weeks before the school year started last summer. You know, we started seeing the numbers go up, and I thought for sure, like they have a plan for this. They did this. They've done all this before. And they weren't going to do anything. They were going to start the school year with zero precautions or protocols. No masking, no reduced activities indoors, like everything back to normal pre-pandemic. And, you know, quickly, you know, and I was sort of new over here. I had a few friends, but, you know, just sort of rallying people to show up at the school board meetings and to advocate as best we could. And the thing that really struck me was we have a really good school board over here, that they were just worn down by a few loud, belligerent parents. And that has just come through. Like they're tired of getting yelled at by crazy people. And I personally really underestimated just how effective that strategy is. So we can elect the right people. And I agree with y'all, like up and down the ballot, that's what we have to do. But the other thing that I didn't appreciate as much before is that we have to do more to support the administration and the board and the teachers when they're doing the things that we want them to do. You know, it's really easy to fire off an email when you're super pissed off about something. Like I'm great at that. but you know, to take the time to really amplify the good things that they're doing. And so that's the other thing, just sort of about activism and all of that. Those are also good ways to practice being involved and aware at a very local level. But, you know, there are school board races coming up in, I think, all of our districts in May or November, and they're going to be ugly. Like, it's going to be really hard. And the other thing I worry about with that is, man, does it make it hard to recruit people to run for those positions for good people? They're unpaid. You're going to get yelled at no matter what you do. And I think they're, you know, that's part of the strategy, is that they are making it just a real pain to participate or be involved. And if the electorate tunes out, then they get to do what they want, right?
Well, so Carrie, to that point, I think that the electorate has been tuned out, right? Yeah. And so, you know, most people haven't been paying attention to school board races and a lot of the down ballot issues. And so it's when they're pissed off that they try to figure out who they need to yell at, right? When they haven't been engaged prior. And so I think a lot of these issues are going to be solved when the electorate does decide to dive in. And to your point, start supporting the people that need our support, right? I think that this past year, the past 2 years of the pandemic has shined a light on the importance of school board trustees and you know, superintendents of schools and county judges and all of these people that have come in to step up to the plate to protect our kids. And, you know, you're spot on, I think, when you say that we need to support those people along the way, starting at the ballot box, right? Which, for anybody who's listening, we are in a primary in Texas right now. This is the only weekend of early voting. Do your research, join one of our block walks, turn out to, you know, support these pro-public education candidates and prime the pump for these school board elections that are coming, right? By getting engaged now and understanding what that looks like. And, you know, this isn't going to stop, right? I mean, we're moving into the arguments about CRT. We're moving into, you know, book bans, right? I mean, like, where's the bottom? You know, and this is all part of a playbook to dismantle public education. And so, you know, I kind of want to open the conversation now. I mean, where do y'all see yourselves in the fight against that? What do you think is our biggest thing aside from voting that we can do to help stop these things in their tracks? And, you know, what are your hopes for Texas and education? And I'm just going to open it up. Anybody who wants to chime in, please hop on board.
Can I say one thing first? This isn't instead of voting, but just something about, you know, the whole cycle of we have elections and then we have a legislative session, you know, the school board's ongoing all the way through. I mean, one thing I learned from the very first engagement was you got to figure out who does what, right? We first went to the yes. school board. They didn't make those decisions. We went to TEA. It wasn't them. It was the legislature. So, you know, there's a new tool that I'm happy to share with people. It's this Who Does What that's on a Texas Educators Vote website where it breaks down public education and you can figure out who makes the decisions, right? You also can go to the League of Women Voters has Vote 411 where you can research each of the candidates and build your ballot. So, like, it's election time. It's really important to be an educated and informed voter and encourage people to go with you. But once you do elect people, it doesn't end, right? That's when you need to advocate. That's when you need to say, look, I either voted for you or I didn't, but you're my representative. You need to inform them. These people often have to cover a lot of issues at every level. They're not experts on almost any of it. So they're counting on you. So say, look, I'm here to help you. I'm here to help you. I'm here to hold you accountable. I'm here to thank you if you do a good job. And if you don't, maybe I'll run against you or maybe I'll find somebody else who will.
I mean, to that point, it's always election year, right? Folks, like, let's stop pretending like elections only happen here and there. There is an election happening every few months, every year, right? Whether it's municipal or school boards or runoff elections or primary, like, it's always election season, folks. So we all have to step up and start paying attention all the time.
Well, I think there's, you know, there's power in numbers, and people think, you know, they're not into politics or elections or whatever, but it really is about civic engagement and how, you know, how we want our kids educated or, you know, just very, very specific things. And the down ballot races, those really local races, have more effect on our daily lives than the big ticket shiny races do. Mm-hmm. And we absolutely need like a change of leadership at the state level, desperately in this state. But we also, you know, there's a pipeline for that. And it's really school boards, I think, especially now, are sort of ground zero for that. So yeah, it's, and I would say, you know, I'm brand new to this district. I've been here since October, but this issue has, you know, I've met a bunch of my neighbors. I've met other mom friends, you know, that have kind of coalesced around this issue.
Yes. And I think that that's a really good point that, you know, a lot of people who haven't been involved before, the school board issues are bringing them in because we all do care about our you know, education for our children. And it, if there's one issue you're going to get involved in, I would certainly advocate that that's it.
Well, I just, Carrie hit on something important that in Texas, in Austin, across the country, there's like a very small number of very loud voices that are smearing public education, that are pushing policies really that aren't supported by people for the most part. They are getting playbooks from extremely wealthy, organized groups and individuals. And I think the best thing people can do is engage, of course, at every level and speak up for like your school, your teachers, your public education, your children. You know, let the children be heard. Let the teachers be heard. I mean, if they really listened to the people, there would be a different message. And there has been, to what Lana has said, since Brown versus the Board of Education efforts to privatize our schools and pretty coordinated media efforts to really damage the image of public schools. So we've got some work to do to speak up, because generally people do love, they love their own schools, they love their own teachers, they think the other one over there is bad because there's been this narrative. So I think it's incumbent upon people to speak up, because there is a war on public education like never before.
So Laura, to that point, I saw yesterday, and I didn't read, you know, the entire article, but in the Texas Tribune, that Texas just passed a law that new charter schools had to, say they wouldn't teach CRT. That that's a new requirement of new charter schools. And my initial thought was, of course that's a requirement, because the GOP has been pushing charter schools and private schools for decades. And so what better way to funnel parents that are uncomfortable with thinking that CRT is being taught in public schools to get them to leave for charter schools if the charter schools can no longer teach it? And so I think they're coming at it at every angle, and you know, we have to be prepared to fire back.
I will say I saw that article too, Lana, and it didn't really make sense, because charter schools get public money, so they're considered public schools for that purpose, even though they, you know, what they do with the money and who runs it are not actually public. But they're supposed to follow those same laws. Like, if the CRT bill says that public schools aren't supposed to do something, presumably they're already under it. So that's what I thought was confusing. So maybe you did hit the nail on the head there. Didn't really make that connection. But it was weird to me.
Yeah, I just wanted to add to talking about the, you know, the coalition of the loud voices. I think that that is a big issue when it comes to voting, is that I've heard a lot of people say my vote doesn't matter. And I think that when I was at a meeting last night and we were talking about that issue and how to respond to voters that might say that. And someone pulled up a cartoon where it said, you know, my vote doesn't matter, said 8 billion people or whatever, you know, 8 million people. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really what we've run into, is that it's become overwhelming for people. I've heard this firsthand when I quit and I went into this, people were just kind of astonished, like, what do you mean you're going to advocate in politics and all this? And I really didn't know what I was doing. I had always been a voter. I mean, I'm not going to say I voted in every election, but I had been. But I always, my husband is a history teacher, and I would just turn to him and be like, how do I vote? You know, so it's overwhelming, and I totally get it. So when you ask, like, what am I going to do in the community? I'm going to keep encouraging people to keep it really local and follow groups like Blue Action. That was a big part for me, that I went to a Blue Action event, a virtual event, and was really inspired. And I liked being able to get informed from people that I was learning to, you know, trust and share those views. So that's one thing I'm going to keep doing, is talking to people. You know, I don't pretend to know everything there is about every candidate, but I'm a lot more informed now than I was. And there are groups like Blue Action out there. And, you know, a shout out for Blue Action, because I think that we do a really good job of trying to engage the voters and keeping it really neighborhood. So that's what I'm trying to do. And I feel like it's making a difference.
Well, and to that point, Courtney, one of the things that I love about what we do is that we're really good about helping educate the voters, right? Most people are not living and breathing this stuff every day. They're trying to pay their bills, get their kids to and from school. And what they need is that roadmap of how to engage that's easy. And I think that that's something that we do well and provide through educational opportunities, through meetings, through the literature and the door knocking, you know, and letting people know this is who's on your ballot, giving them access to speak to those candidates in different forums, and then also, you know, when and where to vote. I mean, I think if I wasn't paying attention to what's happening all the time, I could easily miss elections too, right? And other than maybe driving by a polling location and you see the, you know, vote now signs. So I think that's a really important thing that Blue Action does, is ensure that voters are educated and knowledgeable, and we're making it really easy for them to show up and vote. And Laura, go for it. I know you're going to have to hop off pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm just going to add one thing before I have to hop off. You know, when you talk about how people do, they vote in the presidential election, maybe they'll vote in November. I looked after Wednesday, 1.5% of eligible voters, at least in Travis County, had voted. We had pretty good voter turnout relative to other counties. These, the non-huge shiny elections, so few people vote. I mean, your vote counts so much when no one is voting. Everyone should be voting. We're picking people who make all these decisions. And on top of it, the way they have gerrymandered our districts, it's somewhere between 95 and 98% of legislative districts in the state of Texas will be determined in this primary. People are counting on people not voting. Teachers were harassed for organizing and like modeling civic engagement for students because they were worried that more young people and teachers would vote, and maybe it would upset the way we've been electing people who were being elected by like very few voters. So if anything, these tiny elections matter even more.
That's okay, and that's an important point. I mean, we can look back at when Greg Abbott was first elected. He was elected by 9% of the electorate in Texas.
Ted Cruz won in a primary runoff by, like, you know, 50,000 people or something ridiculous. I remember someone did a whole segment on it a few years ago. It was the most depressing thing that he originally got in there on a Republican primary runoff with extremely low turnout. So, yeah, I mean, this stuff, it absolutely matters. And you know, Texas, talking about like where we come in dead last, not only funding for public school students, civic engagement, like that is the reason why we're getting the leaders that we have, is because Texas still is a non-voting state.
Unless you're Dan Crenshaw and they just carve out a horseshoe for you for your district to make sure you have the right amount of votes. Right.
Yeah. And I thought Laura's, you know, her point about, you know, the 2019 session was the most pro public education session in a long time. And that was because of all of the engagement that elected more Democrats, and mm-hmm. that pulled the Republican Party back to the center. And I'll just, like, my manifesto yet again, if we want more pro public education people, and to give, you know, good Republicans, sane Republicans, the, you know, electoral, you know, flexibility to vote for public education, then we have to elect more Democrats so that it's not so one-sided and they get pulled rightward instead. And if we want Democrats to win in November, then we have to get Democrats out to vote in March.
And to that point, Carrie, the reason that people were so engaged is they were pissed off that Trump had been elected in 2016, right? And people got fired up and they were like, wait a second, you know, this isn't where I want to go. And we can't let that energy die.
You know, I know, we slayed that dragon, but there's like, you know, hundreds more of them.
Right. And I mean, look at what, you know, our state level leadership has done to us over the last couple of years. We need to be as fired up about local and statewide races as we were about, you know, his election and what he has done to our country, you know, because a lot of these culture wars are directly a result of that. Right. And so, I mean, I want to thank you both and Laura for being here today. But, you know, as anybody who's listening today, some of the most important things you can do is educate yourself today, show up and vote this weekend, or certainly vote before March 1st. The last day to vote in the Texas primary is the 25th. Blue Action Democrats has block walks and postcarding parties to turn out voters for this election, and help us, you know, get the leaders on the ballot that have an opportunity to win in November. And you can find that information at blueactiondems.com. As always, please reach out to any of us. You can find us on all the social media channels under Blue Action Dems, and we're happy to help you engage. So thank you for being here today. Thank you, Carrie and Courtney. And this fight's just beginning, so I'm looking forward to continuing it with both of you.
Thanks for listening to the Texas Blue Action Podcast. Texas Blue Action is founded on progressive grassroots action, focused on year-round neighborhood organizing, and committed to building sustainable democratic infrastructure in Texas. We turn out the voters that the Texas GOP fears the most. Production by me, Chris Mosier. Theme music generously provided by James McMurtry. Join Texas Blue Action at blueactiondems.com and also on Twitter and Facebook. Thanks again for listening. We'll catch you again next week.